Before we get to today's podcast about USA Network's The Center, let's take a quick moment and thank our friends over at TrueCar. Here's some useful car tips that you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior, and removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right, TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. The Center Season 2, Episode 6 is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm here with Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, would you like some tea?
Not from you, I wouldn't. No. I actually have a cup of tea right here. Yeah, I have a cup of tea right here. I made it myself, and hopefully I wasn't anywhere. Hopefully nothing happened. The nettles are hopefully fine on this one.
Oh, my God. The neti pot?
No neti pot.
Have you ever neti potted?
I have. It's not something I swear by, but I've performed the task. Have you?
I have not neti potted, but I'm fascinated by the neti potting process.
I feel like what I know about you, I think you should go for it.
You think I would like the neti pot?
I think it might help you.
Okay. TBD on whether I neti pot by the end of our podcasting about The Center Season 2.
Neti podcast.
Neti podcast. Oh my God. Way off track. The T, Antonio, the T, the hooded figure who I guess is probably real.
Yeah. Great advice, Bill Pullman. Oh. Yeah. Just face it down.
Oh my God. A very active episode of The Center, season two here, where we're getting confirmation on a lot of stuff, getting a lot of different developments. Some people seem to be in hot water, so much so that you could boil a tea and you could poison somebody to death. And that's probably how the Beacon is dead, and oh my goodness, and we're still suspicious of Tracy Letts. What an hour of television, Antonio.
It was, look, it's very fitting that the season is almost over, right? Like, we're getting episodes like this where we're filling in a lot of the blanks, and it's not surprising because there's precious time left on The Center season two here. Two more episodes after this, right? So it makes sense that we'd be filling in a lot of these blanks. I like the way we did it, too. I don't mind that it's in flashback. There are a lot of flashbacks on this show. But I like that Vera was not completely honest, it didn't seem like, with Harry Ambrose. So even as they're quote-unquote building trust, we know she's keeping things back. I like where we're at with Vera as a character right now, because I think in flashback and in what we're meant to assume is the reality of situations, she was probably a more sympathetic character. She was standing up to the Beacon. She was doing a lot of the right things. But in the present timeline, she's lying and she's not being honest about things that went on. So we are meant to trust, or lack of trust. We are meant to distrust what's happening with Vera in the present timeline. So I really like where we're at with this character in those small feet, Josh, because Carrie Coon is incredible.
Oh, yeah, of course. She's always fantastic. And I think flashback Carrie Coon, you're right. I think that that version of Vera is a very different woman than the Vera that we're seeing in the modern day. And I think that it is speaking to something that we touched on in our most recent podcast, where I do think that there is this arc that is bearing out where Vera, she was like a very loyal disciple of the Beacon. Somewhere along the way starts to feel like the Beacon is not the person who ought to be in charge, seemingly does something about it, and then, you know, decides to take over Mosswood and do it her own way and do it a better way and do it a different way. But clearly some other shoe has to drop in terms of how things went off the rails under her leadership, because that's where we are in the modern day. So I think that there is this sort of history's repeating itself quality about the Vera storyline that for me felt like crystallized even more after this past episode of seeing that extra bit of flashback to see that she and Upstate Sudeikis have it out, and that she you know, makes her stand against the Beacon, and all of that, I think, is really bearing out this idea that Vera changed Mosswood, and now it's kind of starting to revert back to something that's out of her control.
Yeah, what we saw in this episode is that she seemingly was willing to kill, in this case, the Beacon, with the T that we've talked about, in order to protect Julian. The Beacon is mentioning Abraham and Isaac and sacrificing his son and talking about, we saw the sacrificial calf, and we made those connections at the end of last episode, where it was a lot of the same verbiage. And certainly Vera, flashback Vera, picked up on all that. She was not at all confused. At one point in this episode,
she didn't need a podcast to explain to her symbolism. She picked it up. It was thick. It was thick.
Yes. There was no Nettie podcast in her world. This was there. And at one point when the Beacon takes Julian away because Vera has become too close, he says it won't be long now anyway, or something to that effect, right? As he's walking away with Julian. So that in the very next scene we see is her bringing him the tea. So I think we've seen that she's willing to kill to protect Julian. And what we know from the first episode of the series is that she encouraged Julian to let Shadow Julian in when he wanted, when that was something that came into play. If she made the tea for the Beacon, clearly she probably taught Julian how to make the tea.
Right.
So Julian may have killed Adam and Bess in order to, quote unquote, protect Julian. And I think what we're seeing in this episode is there is a very real threat to Julian in the form of the hooded figure. Are we assuming, for the purposes of argument, that it's Marin in that hood? Or is Marin the Jane Doe who washed up out of the Purple Lake, Josh?
Yeah. So, I mean, just a lot to touch on there, that this episode, of course, it ends in this way where Julian is abducted after getting this advice from Harry being like, have you ever thought that the hooded figure is a metaphor?
Whoops.
Yeah, confront the metaphor, man.
Yeah, face down your metaphors.
Oh, it's very bad.
Metaphors, I mean, be with you.
Shades of Stranger Things season 2, right? Of like, I'm not afraid of you. Yeah. I'm not afraid. And they're like, oh, maybe be a little afraid of the
maybe
thing.
Maybe run. Yeah, maybe run away
from the Mind Flayer. Right. You know, a little bit of shades of Will Byers there in that scene. So that's something that happens. We have no idea if that's if that is like a hooded figure, if that's a literal human being, or if it's is Julian, you know, seeing the fear, he's not ready to confront it yet. He opens the window himself and runs away. Like, is he actually abducted or has he run away? I don't think that the second thing is necessarily off the table. But I hadn't really started thinking too deeply into who the suspects could be. And you saying that it's Marin is fascinating to me, because the show certainly wants us to think that the woman who's recovered from the Purple Lake, which happens about midway towards three quarters of the way through this episode, that they find the car, they find this body. Heather certainly has the reaction where she seems to be taking it like it's Marin, but it's not confirmed that this is Marin's body in the span of this episode. So that does make you probably feel like it's not Marin, right? Like that feels like some sort of shoe is going to drop in the next episode or two, where we get the official identity on this person and it won't be Marin. And if that's the case, Marin being the person who's still alive and taking Julian, yeah, that's a possibility that I hadn't even considered until you brought it up.
Yeah, and so that's that would be pretty, I feel like it would be a twist, but I think that they've telegraphed it enough. We've talked about on this podcast a lot, is Marin still alive? And we've thought, yeah, she probably is, right? Like, this makes sense for the story. And if you want to extrapolate that out to, at some point, Marin is forced out or leaves Mosswood and then decides at some later point that she wants her kid back. And she's trying to get her kid back. Maybe she sends Adam in to infiltrate, because we know Adam had only been at Mosswood for a few months. Maybe she makes a connection with Bess and gets Bess out of there. As you were alluding to earlier, something falls apart under Vera's leadership at Mosswood. That could be part of the equation as well. So if that's the case, is it Marin that's living in the storage unit and Marin that's doing all this work behind the scenes to get Julian back? And is Marin the one who ultimately kidnaps him? I think TBD. But if it's not Marin in the car, then someone else is dead, Josh. Like, that's a big question. Like, who is it just going to be some random female that's dead from Mosswood? Or is there any other female character in this story who this person in the lake could be? I mean, Heather's mom died, but I don't think she like died missing and never was heard from again. Died. I got the impression she died from a terminal illness. So I don't know who
that
this
feels like. That would be a major elephant in the room that had not been addressed, that there was some kind of mysterious circumstance surrounding Heather's mother's death.
Right.
I think would be for them to just like kind of like really drop that in the 11th hour. I don't think that they've been building up that, you know, idea at all. So that would be a real surprise. But I think that that's a good point, Antonio, is that I don't think that there is a great candidate on the board for who this could be other than Marin, unless it's just like another person that the Beacon discarded somewhere along the way, or if this is somebody that Glenn Fisher killed. Like if they find, like, I mean, that body looked pretty decomposed, but if like they find scarring around the ankles, that's going to be suspicious for sure.
What the hell's going on with that ankle scar? Now we've seen it on two people. We don't know if Fisher was the one who did it or not, but it's a weird pattern, and I don't know what's going on with Fisher when Harry Ambrose confronts the woman at the gentleman's club. Why are they even called that?
It's so stupid. So, I mean, we don't
only
need to
gentlemen
get
going here.
We don't have to get into a whole thing
their
about
top
it,
hats and tails.
Freaking dumb.
Yeah, with their filtered cigarettes.
The gentleman's club.
Oh yes, please. Let's exchange niceties. Yeah,
will
I don't
you
understand.
Be loyal to me?
Yeah, sir, you must be wearing tails to enter this club. Yes. Where are your spats, sir? When he confronts the woman out front there, she's like, Glenn Fisher doesn't even like to have sex. So what's going on in the backseat of that car?
I think that this episode bared out what Mosswood was all about for the Beacon to begin with and what Fisher's involvement. Like, we find out that Glenn Fisher sold the land to the Beacon, right? Like the land that Mosswood is on was Glenn Fisher's before. And you can surmise that the reason why he was into that is because Glenn Fisher can basically come to this place and just kick the crap out of innocent women, you know, people who are like unable to defend themselves, and put it under the guise of like, oh, this is like religious
therapy.
Practice. This is therapy. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And once that started getting shut down by Vera, he's very pissed off about that. And that's clearly where he takes a turn against Mosswood. But the Beacon's like, yeah, we need to do this. It's good for her. It's good for him. All of that. This is clearly just like the stuff of an abuser, of a great abuser, somebody who is just very good at coming up with bullshit excuses for doing absolutely horrible stuff. So I think Glenn Fisher, when you see like the scars around the ankle on Carmen Bell, the woman who is from who's in the institution, who we see on tape later on in the episode, we see those same scars around the ankle of the woman who works at the gentleman's club. And it seems like those are what, like cigarette burns, right?
Like they look like cigarette burns. Yeah,
that's what it looked like to me. And I think that tracks with the fact that we have seen Glenn Fisher just be like highly abusive in the context of Mosswood. Now that he does not have that at his disposal, he's probably paying women to like unleash his kicks, because he's probably just a horrible, horrible, horrible human being with incredible darkness inside of him that he needs to unleash on people because he hates himself so much.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on with him. And that's why I feel like if there is a, you know, this Jane Doe in the lake, it could make a lot of sense that it's somebody that's connected to Glenn Fisher, that it's just like somebody that like they deposited somewhere along the way. Or this could be something that, you know, connects back to Tracy Letts, you know, to Jack, to Heather's father. We know that Jack Novak is somebody that we've been talking about a lot as a potential guilty party somewhere along the way here in season two, that there's going to be some sort of reveal with him where he was either involved in something nefarious with Marin, or maybe it could be this Jane Doe. Maybe it could be somebody who's totally different, or it could be the same person. But he has seemed really even more unhinged in this episode, and I think the fact that like Heather stands up and kind of chews him out in this episode as well has me thinking that we're on the right track with feeling very suspicious towards him.
Yeah, for sure. And look, it doesn't need to be the Jane Doe in the car doesn't need to be a character that we already know about from the story, because what we could see is another flashback where this person is killed and that has to be covered up, and we'll just see that all in one shot. So that's possible. it's just interesting to me that we have this mysterious corpse out there. And if it's not Marin, then who? Maybe it is Marin. Maybe it'll be straightforward, but I doubt it. I think Marin is still alive. I think we won't get confirmation that this is Marin. I think it's most likely that Marin is the hooded figure. Josh, you said you hadn't really thought about it. I'm wondering, now that you are getting a chance to think about it, are there any other suspects in your world who could be the hooded figure? Let's talk about Vera. The scene we see right before Julian and the hooded figure in the bed, right at the end of the episode, we see Vera pulling back up in her car to Mosswood, right? And the thing that she's doing when she gets there is she looks at the barn. And that's all we have. It's just a quick scene. It's about 10 seconds. Probably it's just a button scene, like Vera's last scene of the episode. She's gone to see Julian. She says, I'm not going to stop until I get you home. That's what she tells him when she's putting him in the back of the van and he's getting freed from jail and going to the foster home. And then we see her get back to the quote unquote barn. And the next thing we see is Julian being abducted by a hooded figure. Is it right. Vera, Josh?
Yeah, I think that that's a really good theory. And I think that, you know, kind of narratively that plays out fairly cleanly. Where she could be going back to Mosswood and then like be staring at the barn, thinking about where he was born, thinking about what she's had to endure to protect this boy, what she is at, you know, potentially on the hook for right now. And she might be looking out at the distance and being like, what am I waiting for? Why don't I just go and get him now and let's just get out of here? You know, she could be very panicked at this point in time. And I think that it would make sense that she could be the hooded figure that Julian has been referring to in the past. We've also seen Julian being very distrustful of Vera over the past couple of episodes. And that could be part of this that's been breaking out, you know, this dark side of Vera. Like, this could be Shadow Vera is the person that we're seeing here. I like that theory quite a bit.
Well, I mean, the opposition between Vera and Marin is also built up throughout the flashbacks in this episode. It's not a direct opposition. We see ultimately why Vera feels very strongly and bonded to Julian, because when Marin gives birth to Julian, Marin has some complications and she is shuffled away. And Vera is immediately the one forming a bond with him in the barn.
Skin to skin contact.
Skin to skin. Skin to skin is very important. Just ask The Rock, who got shirtless in the bed.
Yes.
And took a picture with his newest child for some reason. So skin to skin. And Vera's doing
that.
That's
why you and I are so bonded, right? Like every time we've seen each other, we've just like done like my face resting against your chest or vice versa.
Yep. Every single time.
Yep.
Every single time that happens. And I look forward to it every time that it does.
Yes.
Skin to skin is a thing. That's definitely it for sure. No other issues. We usually do that at the Gentleman's Club, correct? Blair. Yeah, but we see that. We see the fact that Marin has some issues feeding Julian, and Vera, for whatever reason, is able to jump right in. She says, basically, look, I let him try a few times, and then it just started happening. I think this is something that makes some sense to me. So it's treated as like this medical marvel, but I think that, I mean, this is something that I'm not super shocked by. I don't think it's meant to be seen as a miracle. It's just something that Vera's body really wanted to feed Julian, and that is something that happened. And Marin sees it, and Marin is upset. So
right.
What we see from the flashbacks ultimately is that Marin doesn't feel like she's capable of being a good mother. She sees that Vera is being a mother. She doesn't feel great about it. We know Marin has issues with her own mother and wasn't sure if she could be a good mother to this child before it was ever born. So I think what could have happened is in the 12 years or whatever that passed since these incidents, I think if Marin is alive, she maybe built up some desire to be back in Julian's life. And it's certainly her right to do that. And we saw there was already a simmering disagreement between her and Vera that really hadn't bubbled up yet. We know if the hooded figure is real, that this wasn't the first attempt. We know that when Julian was at Mosswood, this was attempted. And if that's the case, does Vera know that the hooded figure is Marin? Is this something that she was on the lookout for? And is that why Julian knew, or Julian was ready to take down Bess and Adam when they took him away, when he let Shadow Julian in? I don't know. These are all questions I think will be answered by subsequent episodes. But it certainly could possibly be Vera, if not Marin. But if it is Marin, it seems like it makes sense. It's they've seeded this that Marin might be in conflict with Vera, and that Vera would want to keep Julian, would do anything she could to protect Julian, not even anything short of murdering the Beacon, which we don't see happen, but we pretty much see happen in this episode.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. So she gives him the tea, and the heavy implication there is that she's killing the Beacon, because that is how Julian killed Adam and Bess. He gave him the tea, and then they died, and they were poisoned to death. So it makes a lot of sense that this is, you know, we don't need to see the death of the Beacon to know that this is almost certainly how the Beacon is killed. He's not with us in the modern day anymore. I guess it's not impossible that he could be the hooded figure, but that feels a little weird. Where was he? Why did he just leave Mosswood if that's the case? But that's the question that I have too, is where, like, it feels like it could be very clean that Marin is dead and Marin is the Jane Doe. But if Vera kills the Beacon, which feels like a pretty safe assumption, as soon as you say that, it's obviously not happening, but let's just take it at face value for now. Why would Marin have to die? How would Marin die versus her just, you know, up and leaving at some point?
Right.
So just in terms of like the timeline, it would have made sense to me if like the Beacon had done something and like killed Marin, and then they had to like, you know, hide her body or whatever. But after giving this guy the tea, you imagine he doesn't have much longer to live than like 10, 15 minutes, something like that. So what happens to Marin in that time, I guess, is not an impossibility that something drastic could happen there. Maybe that's why we're still having that like final bit withheld from us for now. Like maybe there is a Beacon death scene that we're going to get to see that has some very dramatic consequences, where like Marin follows Vera to go and rescue Julian from the Beacon, who has just taken Julian, and something very dramatic happens where the Beacon like kills her and then starts to choke to death from his poisoning. Something like that could happen, I suppose.
Yeah, if you look thematically at the comparisons between, I know you didn't watch season one and season two.
Although this episode like kind of spoiled it. I mean, like if you look at the documents of...
Yes, there's some Cora Tinetti stuff in there for sure.
It's like, oh, okay. So I guess good for you. Prison sentence commuted. That's nice.
This is... spoiler alert. Yeah. This is definitely... There are a lot of motherhood themes that are present in season one. It's not a predominant theme. But Cora Tinetti is a mother, and her role as a mother and everything that's happening with Cora Tinetti's upbringing that we learn about is very present. It's not quite sharp objects is what I'm saying, but it's at least blunt objects. Like it's not something that is not there.
Man, it's blunt present. Objects.
It's yeah. Hey, buddy. Yeah, it's certainly present in season one. So it's there, and it absolutely is something that I think is featuring here in season two. I think the guilt is also present, right? Because it isn't just that Vera kills the Beacon, if she does, because he says that there won't be much longer now with regard to Julian. It's also that the work is getting more violent. And it's also the scene, I think, between Bess and Vera, when Vera sees that big scar or open wound on Bess's thigh. And Bess is like, no, it's from the work. It was good. You taught me that. Like you taught me that this was good. And I think Vera's carrying around a lot of guilt from that. What I think is possible is that you're pointing at a scenario where Vera kills the Beacon and then they dispose of the body. I think we as viewers could say, you know what? You shouldn't kill anybody, but if you're going to kill somebody, that's probably a pretty good reason to do it. He's a monster. He's enabling all these abusers to come in and just beat up innocent, like warped people.
Right.
And he wants to kill that kid. Good enough reason to kill the Beacon. I'm on Team Vera for that.
For sure.
So then you probably see a subsequent confrontation with Upstate Sudeikis. And maybe he comes back. He was already very upset. Maybe he kills somebody and that's who ends up in the car, like we talked about. I'm just looking into a scenario, and again, we're looking at the articles from this episode spoiling season one. I'm looking at a scenario where, when it all is said and done, Vera ends up being a sympathetic character, and we end up realizing that, you know what, she's really not that bad. She's told lies, but they're probably to protect herself. Everything she did, I understand her motive. She's not a monster. She killed monsters. She covered up the actions of monsters. She's committed some crimes, but she's ultimately somebody I understand. I can get her, and I feel bad for her. I think that's where we end up with Cora Tenetti in season one, and I think we're certainly going to get there with Vera in season two. So thematically, I think the two seasons will be very comparable, and that will all come together very nicely. What about, though, Josh?
Well, if you don't mind, just to, get in there. You know, I would, you know, I certainly come at this as somebody who hasn't watched the first season, and I do think that one of the things that's been nice is you don't really need to have seen it very clearly in order to enjoy the experience here, and it mostly seems like Easter egg type of stuff, and sort of, you know, I think the only plot weight that has been carrying is that Harry is good at his job and is very thorough and certainly believes in justice and like getting the right people, you know, thrown in prison and getting the wrong people get, you know, taken out of there or having their sentences reduced or whatever, helping out the right people. And that's obviously why people are like concerned about him poking around here, because if he finds the right stuff, that a lot of people who have been hiding are going to be in serious danger here. But knowing that that was sort of how season one ended, and again, without knowing exactly specifically how season one ended, just being able to surmise from some of the material that we see in this episode about how that first case closed, do you imagine a scenario where, yes, you're looking for a scenario where we're gonna see a different side of Vera, where we're gonna be on her side, where we're going to be sympathetic toward her, but can you imagine that The Sinner two seasons in a row would effectively have the same ending? I guess, in other words, if we're going to get a sympathetic view of Vera in the long run, does that have to come part and parcel with her going to prison, dying, some other sort of severe consequence, so that it's not just like a note for note for season one?
It's a good question, and she may escape punishment altogether. As yet, I don't think she's going to be in criminal trouble for any of the things she's done that they already know about that are criminal, like the forged birth certificate. So I'm not sure. I thought the fascinating thing about this in the flashback is she doesn't admit to Ambrose everything that went down. What happens is Ambrose shows her.
What does she withhold?
Ambrose shows her the video, and Ambrose says to her, like, if Julian was afraid of anything, it was probably you. And Vera says, you know, you have no idea what happened. And Ambrose says, I know you did things that you are ashamed of. And she says, fine, I will tell you everything.
Everything.
She tells him everything. And then she gets into it, right?
Ben Covington there, yeah.
But when she comes, I think it was also like Patty, like Kevin, I'll tell you everything. Yeah. I'll tell you everything. So what comes back after the flashback is over and she delivers the beacon, the tea, we go right to Vera talking to Ambrose and her saying, like, I wish I had stopped him sooner. I woke up. And I'm like, in that moment, did she just admit to Ambrose that she killed the beacon? And Ambrose says, what happened to the beacon? And she's like, he was unhappy for a long time, and then one day he left. It's like, that's not at all what happened. You gave him the tea and killed him. You're lying. And so that is ultimately not at all what is the truth here. So I guess the version of the story that she told Ambrose is the beacon was pushing it with the work. She felt guilty about him pushing it with the work, and he was pushing it with Julian. She stood up to him and he backed down. Like, that is apparently the version that she wants to pass to Ambrose, that everyone that she stood up, and when she stood up, everyone else at Mosswood stood behind her. The beacon was cucked. He was done. Tail between his legs. Yeah. He walks away. That's it for him. So I don't know if that is what, I mean, that seems to be the version she told Ambrose. I don't think she admitted the issue with the tea, because she said that the beacon walked away. And I think we're saying that tea killed the beacon, and we're going to find that out. So she
that
also
tea will be spilled at some point in time.
Oh, we're going to spill that tea, baby. Yeah, we're going to spill it. Oh, Carl. Yeah, we're definitely. That's terrible. I shouldn't have done that. God. I don't know what I'm doing. I have no frame of reference for that. I don't know what I'm saying. I just heard other people say it. I'm a peer pressured wuss. Anyway, yeah, Vera, she also dimes out the prosecutor seemingly in that scene, right? She says, like, I think that what goes on here is something that's a lot higher than Fisher. And she points to the year. She's like, what year was that? You know, 2002. So she is the one who sets Ambrose on the prosecutor. So she's keeping secrets. Like, she knows a lot more than she's let on. She certainly hasn't been completely truthful with Ambrose. I don't think she's really being honest about what happened with Marin. We don't, for example, have the button on that. She basically said Marin like left a couple of years after Julian was born. But I think we're going to see the scenes where that all plays out. And I don't think she's been completely honest about that. Speaking of cucked, though, how about the large Richard energy from Harry Ambrose to that prosecutor, really getting him to back down? This is pretty good stuff.
Huge Richard energy there for sure. And he's able to get exactly what he wants. So track that for me. You're a lawyer, Antonio. You speak legalese. What exactly is Detective Ambrose able to get out of this guy? Like, what's he holding over him, and what is he able to accomplish as a result? And why does this all go down?
Sounds like what he's holding over him is the fact that the prosecutor allegedly took large campaign contributions from the doctor, Glenn Poole, from Fisher and others, who we unnamed. I don't think Tracy Letts, because I think that would have been a much bigger deal for Ambrose. But some other big names in the town gave this prosecutor large donations, seemingly to cover up not just the issue with Carmen Bell, but multiple incidents. So there were probably multiple complaints that were squashed as a result of these large campaign contributions to this prosecutor, who was then subsequently elected and acted on them. Now, the prosecutor is saying, like, you don't have enough evidence to take me down. That's all hearsay. And Ambrose says, yeah, that's true, but it would make a great newspaper article. And you're up for re-election now, and I think we would know how that would play out, all this bad press. So he's threatening him by saying, I know you did this thing. There's a paper trail. There's enough of a paper trail for somebody to write about it. And if they write about it, you're going to be guilty in the court of public opinion, whether or not you can prove it in court or not. So this guy, the prosecutor, knows he's caught. All Ambrose says is, don't bring these criminal charges in criminal court against Julian. Kick him down to family court, which has a lot of different remedies. One of which, of course, is that immediately Julian is removed from adult jail or juvenile jail, whatever jail he was in, and sent back to the halfway house, which ultimately didn't work out very well in terms of Julian's safety. But it's a better place for him to be, for sure. And so that's a big deal. And getting him kicked back down to family court, there are certainly other remedies available other than putting Julian in adult jail or putting Julian in jail. There could be treatments that could be commuted sentences, Josh. There could be other remedies available in that court than just a strict criminal penalty. So
Sure. It's
a better deal for Julian, for sure. It's ultimately interesting because Julian has had this complaint with Vera the whole time. Like, you're lying to me. You can't get me out. He's built this bond with Harry Ambrose because Harry Ambrose has stuck by his side and been honest with him about what's going on. And here's Ambrose delivering yet another win for Julian. It's not going to get Julian off the hook, but it's going to get Julian in a much better situation for sure than what he would be if he was just convicted in criminal court. So, and it's reduced charges. Manslaughter is different than, you know, premeditated murder or a murder charge. Manslaughter is basically just like one of your actions resulted in the death of someone else. Can be involuntary in many cases, like you didn't mean to do it. There could be negligence involved. In this case, I think the interesting factors would be Julian has problems. He was raised in captivity. He doesn't necessarily know how to be in society. He believed, or at least he claims he believed, right? And this is the other thing with Julian, is who knows how honest he's being at any point in time. But he claimed he believed that he was just helping them hit the reset button, that they were just going to restart and be happy and go back to the beginning, which is what he says at the beginning of the season. I just said they had to go back to the beginning, and he put the rocks over their eyes and all that for the trip. But he's at least in this episode realizing, like, hey, they're not going to restart, are they? Like, I screwed that up. So that's a great scene between Ambrose and Julian there near the end of the episode, for sure. And we're burying the lead, Josh. Ambrose started the fire.
He did. Yeah. And I think that makes sense. I don't think that that's a huge surprise based on us, like, watching that fairly closely, that it certainly aligns him closer to Julian, where he really relates to Julian, because when he was young, he did a thing that almost killed his mother and certainly completely changed his life. And he carries a lot of guilt from that. And that's why he's trying to tell Julian, like, don't let the guilt kill you. Like, it really can lord over you forever if you don't just look it in the eye while you're young. He's basically telling Julian what he wishes he had done, I think, is like, if he could talk to that young version of himself now, this is what he would say. So it was really nice. That was a really wonderful scene, both in terms of the reveal and the acting on Bill Pullman's part, but also I felt like the idea from Julian of him like coming to terms with the fact that like when you die, you don't go back to the beginning. Like, I just killed them, right? Like, what I did was wrong. I know what I did was wrong. I know in my heart that I'm guilty, was just a very, very beautiful moment. And I do, you know, there have been times along the way where you have to wonder, just because you have to consider every possibility, is there the possibility that Julian is somehow playing Ambrose, right? Like, is there the possibility that Julian is tugging on this guy's heartstrings and is like a darker person than we're being led to believe, because we're being led to sympathize with Julian quite a bit? But I think like a moment as like the one that we saw at the end of the episode, where Julian is confronting the hooded figure and is then taken away, I think that like that whole moment of like, I'm not afraid of you, I'm not afraid of you, like that kind of eliminates that possibility for me, that there is like this shadow
point.
Julian that is in charge of everything.
That's a good
unless
point.
He's just like somebody who literally has two different personalities.
And unless
like,
Mr. Robot is in play, Josh.
You know, like something like that, which would be a little on the nose, you think, but you know, who knows. But I for me, it takes away, at least it zaps a lot of the juice out of that idea that Julian is somehow really complicit in what's going on, rather than being a kid who is guilty by virtue of the life that he was, you know, forced into.
I think that's a really good point, and I hadn't really computed that when I thought about where we were with Julian and whether or not Julian had some kind of secret that he was keeping that was part of a larger plan. Speaking of people keeping secrets, though, I want to talk about two other characters in this episode and see what you think in terms of the needle being moved one way or the other. Let's talk about our boy Josh, Tracy Letts. Only in a couple scenes here. He's a big fan of Rumble, Josh. He's a big Rumble user, apparently, or he wants Heather to get on Rumble because the girls choose.
Always has a rumble in his tummy, too. He's always trying to get people to eat his sandwiches.
Or put ranch in his salad, or put some eggs or some ice cream. He's definitely a comfort food kind of guy. But he in that scene, that's just a small scene, right? And we see these small scenes with he and Heather throughout. One of the things that he does in the first episode is their first scene between the two of them. He's telling her, hey, why don't you come to this party? Maybe you'll meet somebody. Get your mind off things. And he's trying to put ranch dressing on his salad even at that point. But he tells her in the scene with the rumble that he wants her to get her mind off of things. Like, stop worrying about these things. Just stop focusing on Marin. Keep your eyes off the prize. Just watch the birdie. Like, let's not worry about something else. And then the second scene, which is a much bigger fight between he and Heather, again, he's telling her, forget about this. Don't worry about Marin. Forget about her and get back to your life. Is there some secondary motive, or is he just looking out for his daughter?
You know, either the show really wants us to be suspicious of him just so that there's another candidate on the board.
Red herring.
And if so, it's very effective, right? So far that's worked. You and I have been talking about him being a shady guy for the last several weeks.
Poor Tracy Letts.
I know. Just the way that he's playing the character, though, there's like kind of like an intensity about him. He's always talking in a way where he kind of just wants to like blitz past anything serious and get into something superficial. And then I think it doesn't help if you know like the meta of it all, that Tracy Letts is married to Carrie Coon in real life, and you got to imagine that there is some way to connect these two characters and put them in a scene together. And that doesn't really bear out in any way that makes a lot of sense, unless there is something darker to the character that he is playing. Or I guess it's not impossible that like she could be arrested in some circumstance where he is around and he could show her some kindness and give her a sandwich or something like that, you know, like on like the, like sitting on like the tailgate of a police cruiser or something like that. Like, I feel like you could see a simple scene like that, but you got to imagine that somehow like these two characters are going to cross over in some capacity. And so you're looking at him as somebody who has done something wrong, or at least has done something Moss Woody. And I feel like, it's either a really great red herring or we really are in for some sort of whammy with this guy. And my feeling is it's the whammy. I feel like we're on a collision course with the whambulance.
I'm loving this. This will be great if it is. If we get a whambulance here, this will be fantastic. We did not, I mean, I didn't look too closely. I rewatched the episode and paid somewhat close attention to who some of these shadowy figures were in the two scenes with Upstate Sudeikis. The one where the Beacon has pushed seemingly Marin immediately postpartum into the work again, and she runs out of the barn screaming, and we see a bunch of people in there. I didn't see Tracy Letts in that scene. I also didn't see a Tracy Letts in the scene where Fisher shows back up the next night seemingly and is ready to, quote, do the work.
Right.
And there are a bunch of guys with him that he's brought to Mosswood, remembering, of course, that Harry was poking at Tracy Letts earlier in the season, I guess last episode, where he said, like, have you ever been to Mosswood? Like, have you ever been up there? And Tracy Letts says, I can't say I've had the pleasure, but I didn't see him in either of those scenes. Possible that he was, and we'll see a different view of one of those scenes, but it seems at least that possible that you're right, that he had some previous interaction with Vera. That's a character, the two of them, we haven't seen the two of them in a scene in the present timeline. So you're right. Take the show. Maybe he just wanted to be on the same sets and working on the same show as his wife, and it's simple as that. And he wanted to just eat a bunch of craft services stuff.
And have that be a part of his character.
Have that be a part of his character. Fine. But maybe there's something more to it. I'm hopeful for a whammy. I'm less sure about a whammy for Officer Brickowski here, who we had previously speculated might have been involved. And then now we know is the guy who helped Harry Ambrose trace the call for Harry to investigate the person who was stalking him and doing this background on him, who seemingly was sent by the prosecutor. Brickowski also later in the episode brags about this, like, hey, I helped him trace the call. Did this completely move him out of possible involved people for you, or are you still potentially tracking this rando officer as a guy? It's just weird that they gave him that little character note as the guy who helped.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. To be honest, I've never been massively suspicious of this guy. He's always just seemed like sort of, he's just there.
Yes.
But that gives, like, that's the perfect guy to be Kaiser Soze, right?
Right, exactly. Right. The guy who was just there the whole time. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. All of a sudden, Harry Ambrose drops his coffee mug. Skokie, yeah. Illinois, you know, yeah. Like you're just there.
Yeah, I was in a barbershop quartet.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not terribly suspicious of this guy. I think that there's so many other people to be looking at, but that's probably why this guy is going to end up being the arch villain of everything.
Yeah, my only thought is it's just possible he's Mosswood connected or Mosswood adjacent. The whole storyline, the reason I think we pointed the arrow at him to begin with is the lady in the archives saying there was a thin man who came in and took the tape. We only saw a shadowy figure of the thin man here at this trailer park where Ambrose had traced the call to Carmen Bell to this guy. And I guess at this point, the show has meant us to believe that there happened to be some random guy who had the opportunity to call Carmen Bell, and she thought it was Satan that was on the phone, or maybe this guy is providing cover to somebody else. But according to what we've seen in the episode as of right now, Ambrose believes that that guy was sent by the prosecutor, and that the prosecutor was the one who was controlling that guy. And that's the end of that story. And that's all there is to it. We did not get the identity reveal of that guy. He's just a red shirt. So is he a red shirt with something more? And then maybe that's where we are with Brickowski, or Maybe there is just nothing. Maybe that's just it. It's just a random guy who the prosecutor hired, and that's the whole story. And this guy had sway over Carmen Bell for some reason that we don't even know about. Or maybe there's something more to it. I just feel like if there is something more to it, then Burkowski is involved, and he has no problem letting Ambrose have this number and sending him to this place. This is all part of a design of some sort. So we'll see. I guess we'll just see how this plays out. But I'm still tracking it, at the very least. Still tracking it. What did you make of the fact that was there anything else in that trailer other than that he'd been doing a lot of deep background on Ambrose that you found interesting? We didn't really go over that scene.
No, I thought that was the big pull man for me. And I also was just like kind of hung up on the fact of like, oh man, now I know what happened to Jessica Biel.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thanks a lot, Joel.
You know, yeah,
you don't have to read so closely.
Previous episodes of your own series, like that's completely on me.
Yeah, I kind of went slowly through it. I don't think this is a big Reddit show. I didn't even look on Reddit to see if anybody had freeze framed a lot of that stuff. We had Ambrose's mother's obit. We had the article about the burning down of the kitchen or the house in general. We had some background on Cora Tinetti, and we saw, I think there were some like blueprints or plans or something. I don't know what those were about. And there were just some random reports, and I don't know what those were about. And a lot of pictures of Ambrose for one reason or another. I guess the prosecutor just kind of tracking maybe what Ambrose was up to. And maybe because he was worried that Ambrose was going to uncover the very thing that Ambrose uncovered, that he had some dirt that was in his past that was connected to Mosswood. And once Ambrose started poking around at Mosswood, that was enough. So maybe that's all it was, and that's fine. I'm not sure ultimately what we're going to get with that. It's just odd to me. What struck me as odd is that Carmen Bell apparently got sedated and lost her mind because she got a phone call from quote unquote Satan. And then who is Satan but just some random dude who is stalking Ambrose? I'm not sure that a random dude like that could have Satan-like sway over Carmen Bell. So that's a TBD. I'm not sure if there's more to that or if I'm just picking at a thread that they don't mean to be a thread.
It's Jack. Jack's the devil. He's Satan.
It's Tracy Letts. Tracy Letts. He got a call. She tried to order some food, and she got Tracy Letts on the line, and that was that. So who knows? I don't know ultimately where that's going. I'm still interested, though, that with Burkowski, for sure. I'm not letting that go, personally. I'm still going to plant my flag on that one.
I think the thin man that I am the most interested in as we're kind of, you know, we're moving into the end game here of season two is Adam, who obviously is dead. he's not coming back to life. But when we've been doing a lot with these Mosswood flashbacks, and we have yet to see Adam in any of them, really. Like, we've yet to really get his side of the story, and how did he come to be involved, and how did he and Bess get together, and how did they get into the position to be taking Julian out of there? I'm just thinking in terms of, like, what are some of the unanswered questions, the lingering threads, what still needs to be tied up and resolved as we only have two episodes left? And I think that that's a big piece of the puzzle, and I think that we're so far away from the inciting incident of this series that we haven't really thought about that guy in so long. There's so many interesting characters on the board to consider instead, that I think that some major facet of the mystery is going to be contributed by something that we have not yet seen from Adam in a flashback, or some information that we'll get out of him. And I'm still liking the idea that maybe he is a mole of some kind.
Whether you're a mole patrol.
I am.
Your favorite place.
It is my favorite place. Whether that was, you know, him as like a cop, or, you know, him as like some sort of like FBI guy undercover going into Mosswood, or if Vera's story about the beacon getting out of there is true and he's not dead, could he be like some sort of emissary of the beacons, like being sent back into Mosswood to go and get his son? Like, I think that there's still just like a lot of different pieces that could be put into play just by virtue of getting some clarity on who Adam was and what his relationship to Mosswood was.
I think that's a great point. And one of the things that always struck me as odd and has struck me as odd throughout is the car just randomly breaks down in season one. And maybe that's just bad luck. Like, maybe that's just bad luck, or maybe there was some greater design in play. And I think we could possibly find out more.
He meant to die. He meant to drink the tea.
he maybe didn't mean to die, but like, I think maybe somebody was on to him, and right. maybe they rigged the car in such a way that it was going to break down. I don't know what you do with that. If you take the alternator out and the battery only runs for a certain period of time or something to that effect. But, there are probably ways to do that because they weren't very far from Mosswood at all. And if this was all part of the plan to take him down, then maybe somebody was on to him. And I think we are going to fill in these blanks. He had only been in Mosswood about 6 months. So that speaks to somebody being sent in with a purpose, perhaps, and whether that purpose is pro Beacon, pro Marin, or something TBD, I don't know. But I think we're going to fill in more in a flashback about the moments right before they left, I think, of the weeks up to when they left. I think we're going to get that answer perhaps as soon as next episode, but I think by the end of the season, I think you're correct about that. And I think we will get some kind of more clarity on Tracy Letts. There is some setup going on, obviously, with the story that Carmen Bell tells, because when Carmen Bell on the deposition, she, when we're playing the tape, we don't see all of it really. It just kind of falls apart. But she says, the Beacon said the only way to break out of trauma was to go straight into it. The sessions got violent sexually and physically. She says one of the men gave her the burns on her foot in the session. And then she says there was another man. And right. we don't have the loop drawn closed on that. So I just feel like there's a possibility. Is it Brickowski? Is it Tracy Letts? Is it somebody else? We're going to find out, I think, a lot of these answers. And that's something else that is certainly floating around out there besides the Adam portion. What else from this episode? I'm trying to think if there's anything on my end. I don't know. I just,
no, I think we're good. I mean, it was a dense episode. What
did you think about poor Julian going full sharp objects on himself there at the beginning of the episode with what looked like shadow Julian or a hooded figure behind him there?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a very tortured guy. Obviously yeah. this poor little kid is going through something horrible. And it's just watching him in every scene is just gut wrenching because you just know that he's just like seconds away from the next awful thing. And he's, you know, he's been in solitary. He's been in this situation. He's been in that, the scene where he was like massively drugged up in prison and like couldn't even talk to Vera was awful. Yeah. Was awful. But great television, you know, and I think that the show has done such a good job at getting you to just feel absolutely horrible for poor Julian Walker. And certainly Alicia Hennig as an actor, I cannot wait for this guy's career.
Great performance.
He is so good. I cannot wait to see what else he does with his whole life ahead of him. So it's tough. I will be really surprised if there's some sort of like real dark agency to
Primal Fear.
Julian. Yeah, that'll be a real, real surprise to me. I don't think that it's fully off the menu, but I think it would just be, it would be a shock for sure.
It would have to truly be a split issue. And it does feel like a little on the nose at this point, because you're right, by the end of the episode, that scene of Julian in private with that deal and being terrified and all that, I don't think that that's a scene we would see if Julian had the active agency in terms of being pulling the strings all along. The Beacon keeps talking about Julian's going to change everything, but that I think is foreboding in terms of I'm going to kill this kid and our work's going to get even more intense. Yeah. It's not foreboding in terms of like, this is a great guy. Now, earlier in the season, we did have Carrie Coon say, like, you can't even comprehend what my son is. Like, you have no idea. He feels everything at all times. He's like this true thing. I think she's just warped in the head, unfortunately, for Vera. And that's what we're getting in that moment. And there's maybe not something more to it. But the episode begins right before he's digging his arm up with her looking at his drawings and her seeing, including what looked like a drawing of Niagara Falls. So had Julian already done that drawing? Did somebody else do that drawing? Was it just randomly there to remind us of the Niagara Falls incident? I don't think that was something Julian did. It looks stylistically different than the drawings we know that Julian did that we saw in that moment. And it just happened to be another picture of Niagara Falls. Yeah. But it's an interesting way to recenter that for sure. That's still a key part of the story. The storage unit was rented in his name. So I think it's probably Marin doing that, but TBD. We'll find out.
We'll find out. Two episodes left of The Sinner here in season two. We're at a point in the series where things are just flying fast and furious, where we're just getting like answer after answer. So I imagine that the penultimate episode will have a lot for us to chew on. We'll be back next week to talk about it all, to chew it all up alongside Tracy Letts, who I'm sure will be revealed to be the devil himself in the second to last episode of The Sinner. What else is going on here on Poetry Recap, San Antonio? You've got your hands full with another show, another podcast. I've heard
Rob tell. Rob Cesternino and I are covering this fourth season of Better Call Saul. We try to get those episodes up by Wednesdays of most weeks, or certainly by Thursdays, and we're certainly getting into heavy Breaking Bad territory with Better Call Saul. There's a lot of fun stuff on that show to talk about. It was a very good episode of Better Call Saul, maybe the best of the season this past week. So we had a lot of fun unpacking that, especially after the previous week, Josh, where we had to have a therapy session at the end of the episode.
Yes, exactly. I heard you had to have a talk.
We had to have a talk because we got a lot of feedback to post-show recaps from listeners who felt like the show, the Better Call Saul show, was moving too slowly. What is this show even going to do? Why are we doing this? We're literally watching paint dry.
Right.
So we had to have a therapy session. We picked it back up this week, and I think the best episode of the season so far. Some really fun stuff. And we have a lot of fun talking about that show week to week. Josh, you've been keeping yourself a little busy too as well.
Keeping myself busy. We've got the Game of Thrones podcast going on here on Post Show Recaps. We are skipping this week. Scheduling is just a little difficult for Rob and I, so we're going to take 1 week off. We'll be back on the train in short order as we are approaching the midpoint of season five.
Everyone's favorite Game of Thrones season.
Meow. Not everybody's favorite.
Hey, Josh, the sand snakes are here. This is good stuff.
The sand snakes are here. So we're talking sand snakes. That's probably why we need to take the week off. It's just like,
That Game of Thrones therapy session.
Yeah, we need to put some distance between ourselves and the sand snakes right now. So Game of Thrones podcast is happening. Fear the Walking Dead with Rob and Jessica Leese. That is happening as well. And new podcast.
Breaking news
are happening now. The great Emily Fox and I, we have found our follow-up to Sharp Objects. We are going to be podcasting about a series that is about to debut on Showtime. It is Jim Carrey hitting television for the first time in many a moon in a very different capacity than when he was last appearing regularly on television. It is a show called Kidding, and we are not kidding. It is deadly serious. We are going to be doing a podcast about Kidding, which is a half-hour dramedy on Showtime, directed by Michelle Gondry, who Jim Carrey collaborated with on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Fantastic film. This is a really, really great show. I've gotten a chance to watch it a little bit early, and it hit me in all of the feels. And while it's very different from what Emily and I podcasted about on Sharp Objects, in terms of tone, this is a much lighter tone. Oftentimes, it's also sometimes very, very dark and very, very real. And it's essentially about a Mr. Rogers analog that Jim Carrey is playing. He's playing a man named Mr. Pickles, Jeff Pickles, in this show, where he is like the Mr. Rogers of his universe. And something very bad has happened in his life, and he is trying to process it and reconcile it in as big but intimate a way as humanly possible. And it doesn't seem like it's going great. And shenanigans and sadness and all sorts of things ensue from there. I loved what I've seen of it so far, and I'm really excited to podcast about that with Emily Fox. So look out for that podcast. Probably like Tuesday, I would say, is when that's going to be dropping. So keep an eye out for that and all of the other podcasts we're doing here on Post Show Recaps. PostShowRecaps.com/iTunes. Of course, feedback for that show, this show, any show, it's always welcome. PostShowRecaps.com/feedback. For The Sinner specifically, you can hit up Antonio and I. We are on Twitter. Antonio, where are you on Twitter? And tell us how many letters and all the R's and the Z's and the Q's.
At AC Mazzaro. And right now I'm on Twitter looking at Elon Musk becoming a meme. This is all I ever wanted. It's all I ever wanted from life.
It's all happening. I am at Round Howard. I am not watching anybody become a meme right now. I am watching the time pass on my recording device as I am recording these words. We will be back in 1 week's time talking about the next episode, the penultimate episode of The Sinner Season 2. Thanks as always, Antonio.
Goodbye, Josh. Here, I made some tea for you.
Ooh. And I'm dead.